beautiful day of spring in Winnaway. We're sitting at 32 degrees, the freezing mark right now, and going to climb a little bit more. So considering this date in March, I guess we're doing okay. Good afternoon, everybody. Stan Turner with you here. Thank you so much for your company. Good to be with you as always. We always, as you know, those of you who listen regularly, and I know there are lots of you, and thank you, you know that we strive to, we try to inform you and entertain you along the way, and we have the perfect mix for you today. Before we get into it, though, I must say hello to our fine producer. And you are a fine producer, aren't you, Kyle?
Why, thank you.
Thank you. You are. I know that spring will truly be here when you get rid of that knit cap, which I talk about every Saturday. When that's off your head, then I think we have turned the weather corner. Huh?
There were a couple days where I did lose it.
Yeah, right. That's right back on now,
yes,
isn't it?
Huh? Yes.
The second half hour of this hour, I'll be joining my colleague here at KLBB, Tom Osmond, the host of Flashback Twin Cities, and he and I are going to talk about, I really don't know what we're going to talk about. He is a broadcast that is TV and radio archaeologist. He, Kyle, as you know, he finds the most interesting items from long ago here in Twin Cities Broadcasting and brings them to our attention. He has a wonderful website, so you can go back in time, and it's always fun to see what he's unearthed in the way of looking at newscasters and radio personalities and all of those things of yesteryear. So it's always a fun trip back. So you and I will discover together what Tom's got up his broadcast sleeve today. We'll do that around 12:30 or so. Right now, well, I want to tell you, I grew up in St. Louis Park, a western suburb of Minneapolis. Nice, average neighborhood, mostly people whose ancestors came from Northern Europe. You know, the Scandinavian countries, and Germany, and Poland, and Ireland, and Britain. That's how it seemed, anyway, to me. But I distinctly remember one fine family just a block over from my house. Lovely people, lovely last name, too. De Camboliza. Mr. De Camboliza came from the Philippines. He and his wife had three sons, very popular guys. We liked them a lot. So it was a special thing, a good thing, to have this family living among us. After I moved from home, I don't recall really having contact with many other, if any other, Filipinos in Minnesota here, Filipino-Americans. Strange thing, I guess I thought most Filipinos and Filipino-Americans settled elsewhere in the United States, you know, far away from our long, cold, unending winters. Turns out I was very wrong about that. There are many Filipino-Americans among us, and now we get a chance to put them center stage and in the spotlight. A new play opens tonight at History Theater in downtown St. Paul, and we have much to learn from it. It's called The Debutante's Ball. The Star Tribune newspaper nailed its theme pretty well yesterday, I thought, with a nice preview story. It's headlined Dancing with Tradition, exploring the drama that many young Filipino Americans face, namely how to fit in while standing out. Neat trick, huh? Well, it debuts tonight, the play does, and we welcome to the program this noon leading actor Stephanie Bertuman. Stephanie, how are you?
Hi, Stan.
Break a leg, break two tonight.
Thank you.
I can't wait. The good Lord willing, I'll be in the audience tonight to watch you perform. It's going to be great.
Thank you so much.
And now I take a deep breath. I'm really nervous about mispronouncing this next name. Eric Pogi Sumangil. Is that close?
Sumangil.
Pogi, I'll do better as we go along. And History Theater Artistic Director Ron Peluso. I got that one down pretty well, didn't I, Ronald?
Yeah, after about 10 years, that's good.
Thank you very much. That's fast for me, Ron. And I'll get even with you later in the program. Okay, well, Ron, welcome back. You were down with a little bug for a while. We missed you a month or so ago with your last play, your last offering
this
at
is
History
true.
Theater. So sorry that had to happen, but you're on the mend. You're much better now.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty
thank
good.
You. Yeah, okay. You never sounded better, Ron.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, give us a debutante's ball. We're going to talk in detail with the main actor and the playwright, but if you could give us an overview. It's billed as a comedy, yet it has a very kind of serious subtext to it, too, doesn't it?
It is. Pogi's written a really charming, funny play, but it's a play that I think most of this country is, aside from native people and slaves who were brought over, of course, from Africa, or immigrants to this nation, and it's a typical immigrant story about how do you fit in, how do you assimilate, and do you want to assimilate, what parts of your culture do you want to hang on to, and what do you let go of. And I think he's written a brilliantly funny, charming story about the Filipino community, but I think we can all relate to it if you have any immigrant background.
Yeah, am I wrong? I rarely hear about Filipino Americans in this state and elsewhere. There's a quote here. This is great, and I'll find it if I can. But I think maybe it's your brother, the director, who says,
yes,
we work real hard at fitting in, and we're really good at it, being almost invisible in a way, you know.
Yeah.
But do we know how many Filipino Americans are in Minnesota, for example? Do we have any sense of that?
Well, I actually, Pogi had written it into the play. My character says there are about 15,000 of us in Minnesota.
Okay.
So.
And nationwide, any idea? I know this, that I believe Filipino Americans are the second largest Asian group after the Chinese in the United States. And that blew me away. I didn't know that either.
Right.
That why are you so invisible?
Exact.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, one of the things that Randy Reyes, who is the director of the show...
And your brother.
And my brother. did say is that we're a humble people. That's kind of one of the... characteristics about us, like, in general. So then that, as he said, kind of adds to our invisibility. Mm-hmm. It's like we have so much talent and so much to share, and I think that sometimes those things just kind of get overlooked because we, and whether we're not used to being able to be in the spotlight, so we get used to being invisible, or, you know, so I think that it's so huge that Pogi has written this play and that History Theater is giving us this opportunity to be seen in this way.
That's great. We'll talk about the storyline in just a minute. How much do you guys, gals, think that the average American knows about the Philippines, about Filipinos? You think very much? And you're not going to hurt anybody's feelings because, you know, I think we all fit in this apart from you guys who are, you know, Filipino Americans. But do you think we know much collectively? And we Americans bother to know much about the Philippines? I don't think so.
No, I would agree with you.
Yeah.
But I think that's probably true of a lot of cultures. I think that there is a lot of ignorance.
There is. And that's the word. It's not stupidity. It's ignorance.
Sure.
It's a big difference. Just not knowing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, World War II buffs will know about General MacArthur and the Philippines and leaving it to the Japanese and coming back and retaking it, and that seems to be the Philippines' glowing hour in the history books, but there's so much more to it. 7,000 islands, I believe, and then 92 million people over there, and settled by the Spanish, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And what about religion?
And yes, and the Spaniards brought over their religion, brought Catholicism over, so that's why that is so widespread. And the Americans brought democracy.
So. Your brother, interestingly, said neither one of those things should have been introduced in the Philippines. What does he mean by that? Neither should have happened. Well, he said it.
Right. So he would be able to, you know, explain
it
accurately. You know, but in my opinion, I mean, I would say it's really a tricky situation when you have oppressors of any sort, whether it was, we're talking about the Spaniards taking over the Philippines or any other oppressor trying to force something on a people, you know? So.
You grew up where? Salt Lake City?
I grew up in Utah, yes.
Okay, what was that? Like, that's the world headquarters of the Mormons, isn't it?
It is.
You were the Catholic faith, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Filipino American.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
Well, I mean, growing up in Utah, I grew up and spent a lot of time around people who were not Asian, and so kind of got used to, Anna in the play says that she kind of relates to this idea of being a coconut, which is brown on the outside, white on the inside.
Oh.
So, you know, and how do you, you know, it's like, you know, growing up, you want to fit in with the people, and if you, all you see around you is not people that look like you, but you are with them, then you feel like you are like them. But then you come into, when I moved to Minnesota, and all of a sudden there was a lot more diversity, and specifically more Asians around.
Among a big population, of course.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'm like, wow, I don't feel connected to these people because I feel disconnected from that part of my identity because of how I grew up. Yeah.
A teenage angst is a part of this play, the debutante's ball. What sort of angst did you feel in real life as a kid growing up? Because of being what you are, you know, your background, your ethnicity, all the rest of it.
Right. I mean, I think for me, probably the hardest part was the transition into high school, which these kids are in high school. My character Anna is about to graduate high school, but I think it's tough when you go from middle school where there's or a situation where you feel a lot more accepted, mm-hmm. because people aren't thinking about perhaps the ways that in which you are different from them, and I don't know if it's the ignorance is bliss thing, but when you're younger, there's an innocence, and everybody is more willing to let other people belong. And but then when you get into high school, there's so much like everyone's comparing themselves to everybody else, and and being a girl can be really hard too.
And that's not just peculiar or exclusive to Filipino Americans either.
No.
And Ron, I think we could say there are many other minority groups who have a similar passage, don't you think? Feel a similar kind of pressures and the rest?
Yeah, I think it's kind of common for all of us to kind of go through that transition period, understanding who you are as a person.
Sure,
just
sure.
Regardless of race or creed.
Okay. Well, let's talk to the playwright, the man who put this story together. I'm so happy he's here, Eric Poggi. And if I were to pronounce your last name correctly, I would say what?
Sumangyo.
Thank you very much. Every time I come to your last name, I'm going to have you say it.
That's okay.
I love what was written, I think, in part of the History Theater's notes on this. You have one of the most often mispronounced names in Twin Cities Theater. That's a marked distinction, right?
Yes.
Poggi, tell us about this. This is an amazing thing. I think it's all this whole play kind of revolves around what is formally called Valentine's Ball and presentation of debutantes and escorts. This is a very big deal. Well, it is for young people anyway, but especially for Filipino Americans.
Right. It's an annual event that is put on by the Phil Minnesotan Association, which is a Filipino community organization here in the Twin Cities that serves Minnesota. And it's been going on since the late 70s. It was something that I was involved in as a teenager. My sister was a debutante in 1994, and I was an escort in 95, 96, and 98. Mm-hmm. So it's something that is really distinct in our community, because most Filipino communities don't actually have a community-organized debutante ball within their community. So a lot of families will have an individual debutante mm-hmm. ball for their particular daughter, but it's definitely something that is a little bit different about what we have as our community here in the Twin Cities.
So this is distinctive and apart from a high school prom or something like that,
correct.
Or Valentine's Day. So this stands apart from that. Okay.
Yeah.
Now tell us about the basis of your play here. This play, this build is a comedy, but with a very serious storyline to it. What do we follow? Six young people, do we?
Yes. Okay. There are six people in it, and I think at its height, in the real debutante ball, I think I did 1 year with 16 or 18 different debutantes and 18 other escorts. I think there was a lot more. So when I started writing this play and talking to my parents about it, they said, "Oh, well, only three debutantes and three escorts? There's always so many of them." And then it turned out that I think 2010 there was three debutantes and three escorts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that is, like I said, it's a very unique opportunity for the kids in our community. Mm-hmm. But when we're talking about the play, we follow these six individuals that are from really different backgrounds, and that's one of the things that I wanted to show on stage, because typically when you see certain characters of color on stage, you might have one example, and then that's supposed to be representative of the whole community. And I really wanted to show that there's many different personalities, there's many different like socioeconomic groups represented in our community, that we all kind of come from. We have the cross section of Filipino Americans is very diverse.
Tell us more about that. You say diverse. In all walks of life, certainly all professions. I love the quote. I think, again, it's from Stephanie's brother. He said, let's see, we're really good. He said, we're humble people. We don't want to stick out. We blend in because we're really good at it.
Right.
Blending in. Huh? So, but do stand out. If we bother to look around us, we see a lot of your fellow countrymen and sister countrymen out there.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting is I've heard people through the Ross Stages readings and with regard to hearing the play, people have talked about, I've heard every kind of comment from, I didn't know there were Filipinos in Minnesota, mm-hmm. to my next door neighbor is Filipino and I'm going to bring them to the play. So very...
Well, I had a neighbor too.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a lovely name, DeCambalesa.
Yeah.
Is that a common name in Filipino?
I don't know that it is.
Okay, never heard it before.
But it is a Spanish, it sounds very Spanish.
Sure,
so it's very... Yeah,
well, every good play, whether it be a comedy or not, always has a sense of tension and friction in it. And yours here, Debutante's Ball, is tradition versus assimilation, as we've always talked about. And tell us about the tensions here involved.
Yeah, I think think that one of the things that, we talk about in the Asian American community is this idea of what's called straddling the Pacific. That you, you're not Filipino, or in our case, you're not Filipino enough to, for the older Filipino generation. You're also not American enough for your friends and the people who are around you. So you have to find this middle ground somewhere, and that's it's an internal struggle, but it's something that is present in your life in a lot of different aspects.
How did you deal with it?
Well, you can come to the play and see.
So autobiographical, yes. Maybe?
There is information in the play okay. That is very close to my experience.
Well, I will come to the play, Pokey. I will. By the way, this play of yours is a homage, if you like, to your godmother. Is that right? Tell us about that.
Yes, she was the first choreographer, and she chaired the event that first year and continued to serve in those two different capacities for the following almost 25 years, I believe. Mm-hmm. And she was just known. She was a schoolteacher back in the Philippines, and she was known for being really tough. Even to the adults, when she would choreograph adults doing folk dancing, she was just known for really yelling at you if you got a step wrong. So I wanted to be really honest about who she was and what she stood for in the community and the way that people remember her. And when after one of the Raw Stages readings, one of my friends came up to me who was a fellow escort, and he said, "Man, I think I had some flashbacks listening to that." Yeah. And so that's when I knew that okay, I'm getting the tone right. I'm getting the energy right.
Now, the wonderful photograph accompanying Graydon Royce's piece in the Star Tribune yesterday, glorious, I think it's about a four-column color photograph of dancing, and we see Stephanie, that is Anna, in character of Anna, doing some beautiful gowns, the guys in tuxes and red vests and bow ties and all the rest. The stage setting looks absolutely drop-dead beautiful. Who on earth did the choreography, Pogi, for this?
That was me.
That would be you.
I am following in my godmother's footsteps.
What do you do in your spare time? Okay, so like Godfather, like Godson.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay. Tell us about. We're going to see some great dancing up there. Give us a little teaser on that.
Well, it's we always did a very big kind of grand waltz. That was part of the cotillion, which is part of the tradition of the debutante ball. So it's actually the story follows these six kids going through from the first rehearsal all the way up to the debutante ball and the big performance, so that we can kind of see. What is it that they learn through this process, or what are the things that they gain when you come into a situation where you don't necessarily want to be there? You're there because your friends are there. Yeah. You're there because your parents force you to be there, and they say, learn about your culture. And so,
I don't want to do that,
but okay, I'll meet these people, and we'll see what we can make the best out of it.
And then suddenly the chemistry starts to work its wonders, doesn't it? Huh? It starts turning. It starts changing, doesn't it? It really happened to you, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It really had an impact on my life, and it was one of those things that coming from, you know, I actually went to high school in St. Louis Park, so at Benilde St. Margaret's, and so and coming from that environment to an almost all Filipino environment with these rehearsals, it was like, oh, I'm not different. These people have the same, are having the same struggles that I'm having, and it was one of those things that like really set me at ease, because suddenly I was like, oh, I don't have to feel like I'm an outsider in this group. I'm just a regular person, and I can kind of be myself with these people.
What's the music like? What are we going to hear?
You're going to hear a lot of different things. It runs the gamut. There's classical music. There's Filipino string music involved. There's some hip hop involved, which is very big in the Filipino American community.
I'm huge in hip hop, as you know.
You can barely.
Yeah,
hop.
I mean there are.
Hips. Yeah, just Ron. Go ahead with your insult.
Making a wisecrack.
Okay. Pogi, go ahead.
No, there are big stars now that are Filipino. There's Bruno Mars is Filipino. There's one of the members of the Black Eyed Peas is Filipino. So they've been around. They've blended in with what we just kind of accept as these are just pop artists. Yeah. But we don't even actually know like the backgrounds of some of these people. And you know, there's one of the dancers on Dancing with the Stars is half Filipino. And there's we've been around, we just don't necessarily say, like, look at me, this is my ethnicity, this is where I come
exactly.
from, very often.
No chest pounding, no, hey, here I am.
Right.
Tonight you finally get on center stage. Ron Peluso, how did you come to this play? This is, I never hear, Filipinos talked about it. You just don't. They're wonderful people, but they don't assert themselves. How did you come to...
An actor that was working with us told me that, he was an escort at the debutante's ball, and that his connection to Pogi, they were escorts together. Tell me about this.
Yeah.
So we sat down with Pogi, and he had already written kind of an early draft of what the play was going to be, and I said, well, let's make it more history theater-like, and let's go through the process. So after a couple years of work, here we are.
Here we are, and we're ready to launch tonight. You had a couple of previews, and tonight is premiere night. Ron, before, lest we forget, History Theater, tell us where it is, how we contact you, tell us about parking, and tell us where I'm going to sit tonight.
We are in downtown St. Paul.
Not on the roof again.
At 10th and Wabasha.
Okay.
And right below the state capitol, if you look south.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you can go to our website, historytheater.com, where you can call us at 651-292-4323.
If I were to ask you to repeat that number, what would you say?
I would say it's 651-292-4323.
Well done, my man, with all the teleprompter, too. That's pretty nice indeed. By the way, you're on the light rail line, the green line, too.
We are
right
on the
there.
Green
so
line.
There's plenty of parking around the area. Showtime tonight, 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
Can get tickets? Tickets still available for tonight?
Tickets are still available for the entire run.
All right. Well, Stephanie, you are the lead player on stage tonight. Can't wait to see you. You'll be talking, singing, and dancing, all of that. And as Anna, what about you in real life? Did you have a debutante ball?
I did have a debutante ball of sorts. Well, I did have my own debut. So unlike in the play where there are three debutantes, three women, I had for my 18th birthday, it was my debut, but I had 18 of my closest girlfriends and 18 of my closest guy friends.
Yeah.
Or I should say 17 of my closest girlfriends because I was the 18th one.
And you had, how many roses did you have?
18.
How many candles did you have?
18.
17, huh? It's kind of a play on the word 18, isn't it? Huh? That's nice. Huh?
It was a huge birthday bash.
I love your Graydon Royce quote. You were saying, it felt like a wedding without a groom. Is that it?
That was basically what it was.
Now you kind of get to do the whole thing, huh? It's a little bit make-believe, but it's real, too, isn't
totally.
It?
Totally. Who knew that I would get to have another shot at this debutante ball thing?
Well, you're not new to the stage, Stephanie. Tell us what you've done and what you'll be doing.
So I graduated last year from the University of Minnesota Guthrie Theater BFA Actor Training Program and got to do a little night music with Moo Performing Arts and the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee up at Theater La Hamadou and Disenchanted at Illusion Theater. And after this show, I'll be in 12th night with Moo Performing Arts over at Mixed Blood.
We'll be looking for you. And Ron Peluso, the debutante's ball runs starting tonight until when, sir?
Hmm? We go through April 10th.
Mm-hmm. I'd call it April 12th, Ron.
Or 12th, yeah. That's what I said. Did I say
translation.
I'm leaving town April 10th. That's what it is.
Ron, I'll give you a tour of the theater tonight, and I get there earlier. No, it's great. So tonight through April the 12th, that'd be a Sunday, I think. Right?
Yeah, that is a Sunday. Up.
And just looking down the pike, we don't want to confuse the public mind here right now, but this is the second-to-last presentation on the 2014-15 season for History Theater. What will be the final offering this spring?
Well, the last one is called River Road Boogie, and it's the Augie Garcia story.
Yes.
Augie was the godfather of Minnesota rock and roll. So hang on to your hats and be ready to dance.
You can be ready to dance, too, tonight, because the debutante's ball premieres at History Theater, and Stephanie Bertumen will be on stage in the role of Anna, the lead character there. There'll be lots of singing and dancing and storytelling. Eric Pogge, Sumung Hill. Thank you very much. I did my best, Eric. Thank you very much. And Ron Peluso, as always, thank you very much. Looking forward to seeing you all tonight.
Thank you so much.
Opening. We're going to be first nighters, aren't we, huh? You get to do all the work, you guys, and I can sit back and enjoy. Thank you so much. Okay, folks, the debutante's ball tonight, premiering at History Theater in downtown St. Paul. We're going to take a break here. It's 12:30. We are at how many degrees? I'd say 32 degrees in the Twin Cities, looking for a high of 40. We'll be talking to our buddy Tom Osmond, going back in time here in Minnesota broadcast history. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back.
At Hymie's Haberdashery, men never sacrifice fashion for weather. So no matter how cold it gets, you can still spot a Hymie's man by his impeccable taste and the confidence that only comes from a hot lather shave. Hymie's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Create a look that's uniquely yours with tailored suits, overcoats, hats, and accessories that make winter blush and at prices that won't melt your wallet. Hymie's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Hymie's.
The Stillwater area is most fortunate to be the home of Valley Bookseller, located right on Main Street in downtown. If you or anyone you know likes to read, this is the bookstore for you. Books, book clubs, book specials, book events, and more books. Check out their website at valleybookseller.com to see events, special sales, and staff recommendations. Call 651-430-3385. Valley Bookseller. Great books, great people. 217 Main Street North, Stillwater. You finally found it, that old photograph of your grandmother that you've always wanted to share with your grandchildren, but it's torn, cracked, and faded. Well, don't despair. Bring it in to Images of the Past in Stillwater. They specialize in restoring and preserving memories for future generations. So when you bring your old photos to Images of the Past, you can share that beautiful photograph with your grandchildren. You can see examples at klbbradio.com. Keyword, photo. Think of the future, preserve the past. On Main Street in Stillwater at Images of the Past.
Hello, Kilfa the Viking here for Viking Meadows Golf Club. Half mile off of Highway 65 in East Bethel, Viking Meadows is a beautiful USGA course. As a Viking, you know I appreciate beauty. But there's something else, something special about this course. When I get out there, my drives are longer, my shots are straighter. Maybe it's me. Maybe it's the name. Maybe it's the course. Viking Meadows in East Bethel. Book a tee time at vikingmeadows.com.
Well, here we are. We are back, Stan Turner, the second half hour of the Enterprise this Saturday afternoon. Thank you very much for being with us here. Hope you're able to get down to the Debutantes Ball at the History Theater in St. Paul. That promises to be one fine offering on stage there. Part comedy and part coming-of-age story. And it can all work together very well. And it's a story, I think, that even though this is about the Filipino-American community, it's really about all of us, too. So hope you can join him. Right now, my good buddy, my compatriot here, my colleague at KLBB, Tom Osmond is sitting here with me in the studio. Tombo, good afternoon to you.
Always great to be in the studio with Stan.
Well, I would say that's mutual, my friend. What? And, you know, I always like surprises. And we had talked about, well, delving back. You are a broadcast archaeologist. You find things from years ago in Twin Cities or Minnesota, Wisconsin, broadcasting, TV and radio, things we thought that went off into the ether and we'd never see again.
If you allow me, you know, where I find these things, and actually our audience has these things in their cabinets, and I always tell people, please don't throw your old tapes away because you may think they're junk. Your junk is my treasure. And it saves me from having to go to people's dumpsters and garbage cans on Wednesday morning to look through people's people.
Herb, what's that young man doing out there in our garbage can? Well, that's not, that's Tom Osmond.
That's Tom Osmond.
He's looking for videos from Channel 5 in 1975. That's what he's doing.
It's March, and one thing I have found in looking through thousands of news video for March, there's two themes that seem to be very consistent, legislature and snow. I'm not sure what's worse, the blizzard or the looming effect of a special session.
Well, having covered those things,
and it's always the worst budget deficit ever. We'll never get out of this. We've never had such gridlock in Congress.
True.
So I want to play a little bit of audio.
Sure.
This is from March 15th, 1982.
Wow.
And it was during a recession time in Minnesota. It was not a very prosperous period. We had some, but the interesting part of this video when I play it is the budget gaps are much smaller than they seem to be these days.
Oh,
we'll play
a little
audio here.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. It was take it or leave it at the Minnesota Capitol today, and House Independent Republican leaders took a walk when they couldn't get their way. Governor Quay continued to meet privately with the remaining legislative leaders this afternoon. They're trying to solve the state's latest $229 million budget shortfall. Our government specialist, Marcia Flohr, is live at the governor's office right now to explain today's, I guess that would qualify as a fight, wouldn't it, Marcia?
Well, not a fight. The beginnings of a fight, perhaps, Stan. The governor says it will be a mix of a tax increases, cuts, and delayed payments, which will solve our latest budget crisis. Democrats of both houses agree, but today House Independent Republicans came in and decided to lay a bargaining chip on the table. They want any budget agreement to include workers' comp reform.
What I'm saying is that workers' comp, in my opinion, has to be a part of the package. Otherwise, there's no reason for people in my caucus to vote for it. They want to do something about economic recovery. And they're not interested in just raising taxes again. The last two times, it's been the same game plan.
There's always that one, got to add one bargaining chip.
Yeah, it's not the beginning of a fight, Marcia. It is a fight. I had to get back into there. The more things change, the more they don't. It's the same old stuff. Different players.
I was reading the...
Different haircuts, different ties and suits, but the same issues.
Reading the Dead Tree this morning, and apparently the Democrats are offended by what the Republicans said, and they're offended by what the Democrats said. It's some... I don't even know what the budget issue was today, but I was kind of skimming through it, and I know that there's a lot of issues on the block this session that I'll call on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Rideshare.
Right. And there's rancor in the air, Tom, over at the Capitol. How unusual.
Hmm? And a man that was actually had to, we'll say, herd these cats together was Governor Al Quie.
Yeah.
And Al Quie, he is a unapologetic Republican, but he's a person that, and he says this in recent article, but he's a person that had to do something that was, it's not easy for politicians today, compromise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And for that, he never ran for elected office again.
He was a great compromiser. I knew the governor very well, and he was of a different stripe of politician back then. He was, in fact, a thoroughbred Republican, and proud to be, and why not? But the truth is, when it came time to sit down with the opposite numbers across the political aisle, he could find the common ground with the other side. And that's how government, I think, works, having covered it for a long time. It's never my side and nothing of your side. It can't work that way.
No.
You have to find the golden mean, as they say.
Mm-hmm. And for all the rancor that Governor Quie had to endure, this is actually a little bit I want to play. This is Governor Quie having a lighter day at the Capitol. This is from Channel 4 had done kind of a profile on Governor Quie in the 4 years, which were very... Republicans had not had control, as you know, of the State House for many decades. Governor Quie rolled in after Governor Perpich and many others, the Minnesota Massacre, as the DFL called it, toward the end of his first term, when Governor Perpich and a split legislature was coming in. This was a little light profile of Governor Quie, and I'll just play a little bit of this here.
Okay.
Thank you, Skip. Earlier tonight, we summarized, or just a few moments ago, summarized the Quie administration and some of the tough issues that have confronted the governor over the past 4 years. Tonight, we thought it appropriate to take a moment to look back at some of the fun as well, such as this scene from June 13th, 1980, Governor Quie testing out a piece of modern art.
He's dancing, guys.
Light greens and musical tones.
He's dancing down the Capitol stairs outside. What's he doing? I've never seen this.
This is
After all,
this is the simulated piano on the steps of the Capitol that Governor Quie was...
Is that what it was?
He was destroying... If you go to tcmedianow.com, this is the first video. His son emailed me after I posted this and says, my dad needs to see this. I need a link of that. So I sent him a link. I'm happy that the governor's, I think he's over 90 now. He's still riding horses.
He is.
And he wanted to see that video. So I had to unearth it and find it for Governor
Wonderful.
Quie.
Oh, it's a great, great moment in political history, and I mean it. It's nice. Little comic relief of the kind we could all laugh at.
This is this next piece, also Governor Quie. This is a commercial, and gas prices are falling down right now, but in 1979, gas prices were going up. They might have been 40 cents a gallon at one point.
This is 1979.
That's right. And I'm reading now that our western states are trying to increase their speed limit to 80 miles an hour. This is a commercial or a public service announcement promoting safer driving, lower speeds with Governor Quie.
Okay.
Increased average speeds on Minnesota's highways contributed to a 14% increase in traffic fatalities last year. Driving 55 miles an hour saves lives. Gasoline prices have increased dramatically since last year. 55 saves gas. Driving 55 gives 18% more mileage than driving 65. So, 55 makes sense. This is Governor Al Quie, thanking this station and the Minnesota Safety Council for arranging this message.
Well, thank you, Governor. How much was gas going for per gallon back then, do you know?
I think about 40 cents a gallon.
40 cents a gallon.
Kyle?
I'm starting to cry.
We'll look it up.
Starting to cry. Okay.
March 18th, 1982. This is not too many days after the big budget gap, but you know what the big topic of the news was this day? If it's not the legislature, it's snow.
It is. It's got to be that or snow.
So let's see what Stan Turner had to say in 1982.
Eyewitness News at 5 with meteorologist Dennis Felkin and newscaster Stan Turner.
Good afternoon, everyone. You know those T-shirts? They're selling the ones that say, I survived the Minnesota winter of 82. Well, folks, we haven't survived it. Not yet. There's still tomorrow to get through. Dennis Felkin has the bad news for us. Dennis, I'm tough. I can take it.
I love an optimist.
What's going to happen to us, Dennis?
Well, Stan, as we've been talking about for the past couple of days, a major winter storm, late winter, early spring storm, is still gathering strength in New Mexico right now, and it appears certain it's going to move into the Midwest, and that includes Minnesota. Here's a satellite, Lou, for the last 8 hours, and we'll roll this along, and the storm center is now reforming in New Mexico, as we mentioned, with a tremendous cloud shield now beginning to be pulled up ahead of it, and some of those clouds are indeed beginning to move into
the
Minnesota.
Clouds are right over Minnesota somehow. I'm not sure how that works out.
Well. Yeah. Oh, there's a national radar map across the country.
We need to do a disclaimer here real fast, folks. This is not about right here and now. This is from the 1980s. Although it could be. It would be plausible.
You know how many times you can place a news graphic or a weather graphic from March of, I don't care what year it is, 1955, 85, it's the same weather. And probably just as accurate, the extended forecast, as it was in that era to today.
Well, we don't have a monster bearing down on us right now, although we do have a little bit of a dusting coming maybe tomorrow and into Monday, but nothing to worry about. Nothing like that that we were talking about. What was the year, 82?
82.
82.
This next clip, smoking always seems to be a hot topic, and I'm guessing in that KSDP newsroom, Stan, back a few years back.
Sure.
A lot of cloud of smoke in that newsroom.
Absolutely.
Right?
I remember when they refurbished the newsroom, part of the decor were ashtrays that matched the desks and the paper trays and all the rest, so everybody made sure, the decorators, that we had matching ashtrays. Yes.
I picture the decor of the 70s, which is very yellow and brown. It was made to make sure that nothing was ever white, so came all that smoke that seemed to cloud the rooms. I can only imagine, you know, and I was a little young to be hanging out in adult establishments, but I can imagine some of those bars and restaurants downtown in St. Paul, just the thick of cloud. I know when smoking became illegal in bars and restaurants, which I'm sure 30 years ago people would have thought were crazy, if we would have thought that, the aftermath, the ceilings and the carpeting, a little bit tainted from.
Remember those old Sherlock Holmes films with Basil Rathbone and foggy London? That's how it was inside those places.
In 30 years ago, Dr. Everett Koop, does that name sound familiar?
Yeah, it sure does.
He,
Surgeon General.
Came to town, and he had a very interesting concept, being smoke-free. And this is from a Republican administration Surgeon General.
Wow.
I want to play this clip here. This is from Channel 4 in 1985. And Dr. Everett Koop is giving a live satellite interview from his hotel room at the Radisson.
Okay.
And he's going to talk a little bit about what he feels is a smoke-free world.
Wow.
On future campaigns. A very different kind of campaign has brought the U.S. Surgeon General to the Twin Cities. Dr. Everett Koop testified on the dangers of smoking before a legislative hearing at the state capitol today. Koop strongly supports Minnesota's Clean Indoor Air Act, requiring no smoking areas, and would like to make it a model for the nation. And he joins us live now. Good afternoon, Dr. Koop.
Good afternoon.
What would a smoke-free environment by the year 2000 be?
Well, it would not be a proscription on smoking for citizens who wish to smoke. The term society comes from a root word which means companionship, and I think that says it all. You don't smoke in the presence of other people whose health you might damage because of your smoking.
How realistic do you think that is?
I think it's very realistic. It's 15 years away. The response since I made this call in May of 1984 has been tremendous, and we look forward to a national meeting sometime in this fall of 85, where perhaps 200...
I love that people say, how realistic is it we actually might have a segregated smoking section where smokers and non-smokers are not together?
It's amazing. It seemed like a very real question back then. It really did.
The audacity, people that are a bit insulted, like, what?
Yeah,
I can't smoke. I can't smoke with you?
That is the year again. That was...
1985. 30 years ago this month.
Mercy. How about that? Tom Osmond with us here. We're going back in time here, having some fun and getting our eyes wide open on some issues we might have forgotten about. And it's really amazing to do a little time traveling here. We'll be back with Tom and yours truly right after this. They've been sitting on that shelf for years, those special memories of your childhood on slides, videotapes, or 8mm film. You want to share them, but you don't have a way to do it. Now is the time to let Images of the Past do it for you, and you'll have those special memories to share with the family. Images of the Past can transfer your memories to DVD to be enjoyed anytime by the whole family. Think of the future, preserve the past. On Main Street in Stillwater at Images of the Past and at imagesofthepast.com. The Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater has a monthly event for local mystery writers and fans. Held on the first Wednesday of each month, the Totally Criminal Cocktail Hour always includes a lively discussion and a great time. Reservations are required. The cost $10. Held at the Dock Cafe, appetizers are included. Cash bar available. The upcoming April 1st event features Alan Eskins discussing his latest book, Life We Bury. Call 651-430-3385 for reservations. Valley Bookseller. Great books, great people. 217 Main Street North, Stillwater.
At Hymie's Haberdashery, men never sacrifice fashion for weather. So no matter how cold it gets, you can still spot a Hymie's man by his impeccable taste and the confidence that only comes from a hot lather shave. Hymie's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Create a look that's uniquely yours with tailored suits, overcoats, hats, and accessories that make winter blush and at prices that won't melt your wallet. Hymie's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Hymie's.
If you're not yet a Shorty customer, discover the difference. First, your clothes are expertly cleaned in downtown Stillwater. And then there's the friendly service. Longtime customers keep coming back because the staff knows and remembers them. Family owned for over eight decades. Shorty Cleaner Launder, the friendly cleaner in the valley. Find Shorty's in Valley Ridge Mall, downtown Stillwater, and downtown Hudson. And online at shortycleaner.com.
And here we are back again, Stan Turner, the second half hour of our show today. Thank you very much for coming along with us on this ride, kind of a trip back in history. Tom Osmond, my KLBB colleague here, of course, the host of Flashback Twin Cities, where we get to look in the rearview mirror and see what happened on radio and television around these parts years and years ago. And by the way, our answer man in there, Kyle, has done his homework, and we were wondering out loud what gas was going for. We heard the Alqui public service announcement back in
$1 a gallon.
$1 a gallon in 1979. Is that it?
That was the second energy crisis in this
country. Yeah. I don't know if I can afford to fill the car at $1 a gallon. I don't know about that.
And imagine the fuel efficiency of those vehicles in 1979, right?
No kidding, right. We are looking, you are focusing today on the month of March years ago on Twin Cities broadcast, radio and TV. And what do you have next?
Outside of snow and the legislature, the other big thing is tournament time. And, you know, Channel 4, Channel 5, Channel 9, every station tried to get all the tournaments, and the bidding prices, these tournaments were outrageous at one point. I know that your boss, Mr. Hubbard, tried. He had it for a few years, and then CCO had it, and then I think CCO decided that they were just going to do it, and they were going to bid tons of money. But Channel 11, that station kind of came out of nowhere, and they decided to get some tournaments. They got some basketball tournaments. And this is from March of 1985. And Bud Grant, I think this was his second time coaching the – he happened to be just a guest out at the tournament. So this is a little Bud Grant.
A former Vikings coach.
A special guest.
Former and current at this point.
I certainly have, Ray Scott, a fellow who by no means is a strange face to anybody in Minnesota or any NFL fan for that matter. Bud Grant, the coach of the Minnesota Vikings. Bud, not only are you a football legend, I guess, here in the state of Minnesota, but quite a basketball career, too. Maybe you can recount some of your basketball experiences for us, where you played that sort of thing.
Well, like everybody else, you know, you play in high school. I was in the Navy for a year, played at Great Lakes. I was at the university, played there for 3 years, played a couple years with the Lakers, and then, you know, recreationally until I was about 40, so I got a lot of basketball in the background.
Your son, Dan, a member of this Bloomington Jefferson team, they had a rather easy time in this game. I know you've watched them a lot this year. Was that the best game that you've seen them play?
Well, it probably was. I don't think Bemidji matched up with them size-wise, although I thought Bemidji did a great job. They can really shoot. You can see how they got here. Sean Day, as their big man, has come on all year, probably had his best game tonight.
Bud getting his analysis of
Yes, Bud's analysis is always something worth listening to. The guy seems to know a little bit about sports, doesn't he?
He might know a few things. He didn't do too bad. He could have won a Super Bowl.
Well, his team used to play out there at Met Stadium when it was 20 below wind chill, and apparently the guys didn't have any hand warmers or anything, and they were outside, and they won a lot of games, as I recall.
A name that not many people...
Birds weren't flying into windows, were they?
No, that seems to be Vikings another hot topic. You know, the Metrodome never had that problem with those birds pecking at that big tarp.
Right.
Arv Johnson is a name that not many people remember.
I surely remember.
You remember this. And a lot of our viewers may remember, or a lot of our audience may remember this, but Arv Johnson was the capital reporter for WCCO Radio. You know, today everyone's very blended between TV and radio. But in those days, radio had their box, and KSCP Radio actually gave up their press booth for radio for the first time in about 60 years in the press from New England Sports. This was the close of the session. This is actually in April. I'm cheating a little bit. It's April. Yeah. But Arv Johnson was honored this day because Arv Johnson died at the last day of the session.
But what year was this?
1980.
Before we go, Tom, if I could, I knew Arv. I worked right next door to him. We had adjoining rooms in the Capitol Press Corps, bunker we called it because it was down in the basement there. Arv became on radio because CCO's big reach, 50,000 clear channel. He was kind of the voice of the Capitol, of the legislative news there. And he had this very, well, we'll hear it here, that deep voice. Somebody once said, in the morning, Arv sounded like somebody running his thumb on a comb across, you know, it's kind of a low groan.
Went home in the wee hours of this morning, and the bonding bill, well, it never passed. It contained money to pay for new highways, university construction, the heating project in St. Paul, and also to repair a lot of state buildings. None of that will be done now. But the lawmakers did pass a tax bill that is worth $17 million of tax relief to you and me. But before you count your extra money, listen to this. The legislature also passed an increase of 2 cents in the gasoline tax.
So well, actually, I thought I had the clip here.
No, okay. Let me tell you a little anecdote about Arv Johnson. Well, here we go.
There you go.
He once guessed he'd covered 1,000 political conventions. He told a friend he wanted to visit every state legislature in the country, and he almost did. He had 14 to go when he died. His home away from home was this 8x12 cubicle in the basement of the state capitol, whose well-worn chair and simple wall plaque said a great deal about this great bear of a man. And when the 62-year-old newsman retired last spring, the Minnesota House declared an Arv Johnson Day at the Capitol.
He was the kind of person that, everyone simply liked him because he was easy to get to know and easy to talk with. He was the kind of person that was really quite gentle. He was gentle in his speech, except when he was on air, when he kind of punched it.
The House had pretty well taken care of important legislation, but the Senate went right up to the midnight deadline for passing bills and just a bit beyond.
He understood government and politics, and I think that's what made him such an authoritative voice. And I really respected the way he handled news. He never had an axe to grind, never a cause. Everybody had their time on the air in Arv's newscast.
Well,
here's Nick Coleman, Senator Coleman.
Can we hear him? I was here. I got mad at him once, and I was wrong. He was an accurate and gentle person.
You know, when he signed off...
The voice of Senator Nick Coleman, a guy I love covering. It's hard to distance yourself between these people you're supposed to be objective about, yet they are so charming. Senator Coleman was one. Arv Johnson, a reporter, a terrific guy. And as Jerry Nelson, we heard Jerry's voice there just a minute ago. He was the dean of the Capitol Correspondents, the Associated Press reporter there. And sad to say, Jerry passed away just a few years ago. What a sterling reporter and person he was. It breaks your heart to see all these good people gone, but Arv Johnson was in the front ranks. And CCO used to say, used to call it CCO land. Everything was CCO land. And Arv once heard that my boss, the KSDP radio, I used to do some reports for radio, so I hear you're calling it KSDP country. We have CCO. Arv said, I just want you to know that KSDP country is a subdivision of CCO land.
You know, there might be a few people from that, the good neighbor of the Northwest, might have had a little bit of a high.
I think a little bit of that. Hubris, maybe, whatever you want to call it, yeah.
Well, he's also a member of the Minnesota Broadcasting Hall of Fame, which I think he might have been inducted the same year that I was where it was Stan Turner a few years back. If you allow me, sure. May 7th, we're going to be at a fun event. May 7th will be Newsapalooza 2. And last year, we had Newsapalooza 1. We had
Newsapalooza. Isn't that great?
We are going to be playing some of these fun clips you hear on TC Media Now and also the Stan Turner Show. Some clips that I may not play on the radio or on my website, which will be debuting.
Hey, give us a teaser.
We might have some more, some Channel 5 bloopers. We might have some...
I've got a star in that one, I'm sure.
you might make a cameo or two in those, okay, but we're going to have Stan Turner's going to be there, Kevin Berger, Brian Lambert. We're going to have some guests that we had last year and some new guests events, too, for a little panel, so people that come can actually talk and meet people that were on the news then and now. A lot of people that were on TV are now in radio or in online journalism, so it'll be a fun night. We'll have some clips, and you had fun last year. You had a lot of fun. Despite the fact it was about 25 below the night last year.
Brutally cold February night. We all gathered at the Heights Theater in Columbia Heights, and Tom, you and your colleague, and I...
Jack Stallman,
you put together a brilliant program, not because we were... It was just so well done, and I learned so much that night from my fellow broadcasters and some journalists in the room. Barry Zevan, his love of grammar, of proper spelling and grammar. No, that's wonderful. So I got to see or got reacquainted with a lot of folks. But you filled the house there, Tommy. The theater was full.
This is a fundraiser for TCMediaNow.com. You can get tickets at TCMediaNow.com. We have a link right there on the website. $15 to get in. I think it's a pretty good value for a night of fun. You can actually get some popcorn and get a soda, sit at the Heights Theater, and enjoy an evening of history and humor with myself, Stan Turner, others, and we'll have a lot of video. I have a lot of video I've collected this year, and we'll play some video we've seen before, which we laugh at, and I promise you, Stan, we will not be playing the football promo this year. We've gone two shows now playing the football
promo. The team of teams. Let's see. So it's a steal at
$15.
And what's the date again, Tommy?
May 7th, 2015. Okay. Thursday night, 7:30 p.m.
Okay. We'll be there. Folks, go. Have a great... Treat yourself to a great evening.
I have one more clip I want to play. This is actually aired 39 years ago today. And you remember Channel 11 when they were an independent station.
I sure do.
This was during the height of the primary season. And this is just... I like this because it is better than the Saturday Night Fever disco album, the theme. So this is March 21st, 1976. Kyle is going to play this theme song, and Kyle loves these theme songs. He actually saves them, and he plays them for
the Discovery Station.
Like Star Wars.
Yeah, really. Ooh-hoo. Look out for that light wand. No time for the news. It's all intro.
Good evening. I'm Joe Casella. In the news tonight, presidential hopefuls are gearing up for Tuesday's North Carolina presidential primary. President Ford and Jimmy Carter, the frontrunners, stayed home today while other candidates hit the campaign trail. Republican Ronald Reagan and Democrat Jimmy Carter plan to resume heavy campaigning tomorrow. Reagan, who hasn't won a primary this year, says that he would settle for coming in a close second in Tuesday's election. But Wallace aides are denying that the Alabama governor is also resigned to another loss. Idaho Senator Frank Church, meanwhile, who jumped into the Democratic presidential race last week, says that presidential candidates should be putting more stress on foreign politics.
Reagan, I'm not sure if he's ever going to make it.
Reagan, he's too old to be president. I don't think he ever could be elected.
He's too old, too fringe.
Oh.
And by the way, you can see these videos in their entirety at tcmedianow.com. It's a cold day. Go, spend some time on the computer tomorrow.
Haircuts, including mine, are unbelievable. You know, the Prince Valiant stuff from back then is just a hoot.
Those were high-priced haircuts, Dan.
They were.
Did the Hubbard have a staff of makeup artists?
They did. And they had then hair cutters on the premises there. And we still came out looking that way.
But somehow it was number one.
It was number one.
And by the way, to anyone listening, and again, if you enjoyed the audio, first of all, we have a Facebook page, TC Media Now, on Facebook. Also, if you like what you see, you might have some tapes that you tape some movies that you think that might be some news clips and you think there may be some commercials. This is how TC Media Now exists. Please email me right from tcmedianow.com. You can even call the station. I'm sure someone here can get your name and get it to me, and I would appreciate anyone's donation.
What's your program? What's on your program today?
We have Tom Hanneman from Fox Sports on the show today.
Wonderful.
He's actually in the lobby. He's going to talk a little bit about... he actually had a red light experience himself. We were talking about that. It was a 10-year anniversary of that.
Yes, indeed. Tom, thanks for doing this. Thank you for coming in. It's always great pleasure to have you. Thank you, buddy. Stan Turner here. Thank you very much for your company. Tom is next here. Thank you. Have a great weekend, and we'll catch you on the music show on Monday, right after the news at noon.